We are names, we are stories, we are bodies.
We need to name how our embodiment in the image of God
empowers us to accept our bodies.
We begin our naming as we listen in on a conversation between Letty Russell, Chris Smith, and Joanne Timmerman.
Welcome to our conversation. We don't exactly know how it will go because we didn't know whether we were shapers or thrusters or what we were. But we want to come together and talk today to begin the conversations about power. Not about power as domination or exploitation, but about power as shared resources for the work of justice. For feminists, as we know, power is not a zero-sum game. As we just saw in our holy play, the more power you share, the more there is. The more you give it away, the more it's there. And we want to talk about how this power is exercised in social, economic, political, cultural, religious realities of women's lives, how it is exercised in our bodies, in our families, in our work and play. We are looking particularly, as you know, at three of the issues that we address as women today, women of all colors. The one of reimagining embodied spirituality, reimagining power as welcome difference, and reimagining power as ecclesial subversion. Tonight, we have our discussion around our first topic, the topic which has many titles. You can see them all in the booklet. We're not quite sure what the topic is. The erotic, spirituality, sexuality, embodied spirituality, power, you name it, and we'll try to find out what that is. I'm just going to begin by throwing out a couple of definitions because I am a shaper, and then the others will reshape my shape. Just to say that power is described very basically as the ability to accomplish what we desire, to accomplish our ends. To be alive is to have power. Anyone who is alive has the power of life, however small. So tonight we're not discussing whether or not we should have power. We all have it. But what to do with it, how to name it and claim it for ourselves and use it in ways that are life-giving for all people in this world. Feminists, as feminists together, we are struggling with how to exercise power in a way which is not power as domination, leading to oppression and scarcity of power, but in a way which leads to sharing and empowerment for people. We want to find out how to multiply it. And part of that multiplication is to recognize its connections to our bodies and to the erotic. In your booklets, we quoted Carter Hayward as saying, "The erotic is our most fully embodied experience of God's love." What does that mean, the erotic as the experience of God's love? The power of the erotic is a power that gives us energy and purpose, says Audre Lorde, for genuine change. It is a revolutionary force. This sense, this internal sense of wholeness, of self-satisfaction and passion, when really connected to our bodies, moves us. So tonight we want to start then by talking about how this connection is made. How is it embodied in our lives, in our spirituality? And I think which one of you would like to start to talk about that?
I'll start. I think I'm a thruster, but we'll see. You can tell me at the end. I'm going to throw some stuff out.
Okay, well done.
Our play was reminded me very much of my first impression of sexual experience, is that all you need is your body. There's nothing else in human life where you can do so much with so little. So it seems to me this is one way in which I would answer your question. How is it an experience of God? It's an experience of the body as the completeness of the bodies together. I'm going to probably be the one who keeps throwing the language of sex and sexuality into this. One of my preoccupations is so that feminists don't get removed from the body in another way, that it's removed from real sexuality, real human beings' desire and longing for union and fulfillment, and gets turned into an energy and a kind of an abstraction. It's extremely important to me that we call things by their names, even sometimes by their street names. So we may do that occasionally. In my understanding, by the erotic, I mean our being toward union. And I mean our whole being is for union with another, so that I experience my being most fully in the desire to dissolve those boundaries and move toward union. I think the erotic is the most revolutionary force, therefore the biggest change agent in our possession, because it dissolves boundaries. People between classes, races, fall in love. People fall in love against the rules. People fall in love in ways that are not supposed to there in their world to happen for human beings, even against normality, one might say. So
I want to work just a moment with the concept of spirituality and then power, because they're utterly related for me. For me, spirituality has to do with the concrete embodied practices of our lives that flow forth from both our deepest convictions and our ultimate concerns. For many women, I think for us living under the full oppressive weight of a patriarchal world, spirituality will also be intricately interwoven with renaming, remembering, reclaiming, and reimagining. In my own feminist spiritual journey, however, it's been necessary for me to abandon certain traditional understandings first, almost, before I could move on to construct and embrace a spirituality that felt much more real and whole and healthy. I do not believe, if I ever did any longer, that spirituality is rooted in self-denial and deprivation. I do not believe that spirituality is about the transcendent otherworldly dimensions of existence. I do not believe that spirituality is anti-body or anti-sexual or anti-nature. And I do not believe that there is some generic universal experience of sexuality that encompasses all human beings, that spirituality we practice and live within is utterly contextual in nature and utterly informed by our social location. For me, I can no longer separate women's power and women's spirituality from women's resistance. That's a key connection for me. Resistance is not the beginning point of our on our way toward some creative, life-giving power. Power is found and generated in the very midst of acts of survival and resistance. And the most oppressed among us know this truth well. The world would have us believe, though, that resistance is reactionary, or it's defensive, or it's more a critique of what is than a vision of what can be. But I believe this is another one of the dominant culture's death-dealing dichotomies. The world would have us believe that resistance is reactionary, defensive, more a critique of what is than a vision of what can be. The old saying about, I know what you're against, tell me what you're for, as if resistance is only about againstness. But I believe this is another one of the dominant culture's death-dealing dichotomies. Only people of privilege would think that resistance is devoid of vision or devoid of revolutionary power. Reimagining is not only about visionary constructing, it's about visionary no-saying and visionary resistance. And all of this is about power, and all of this is about spirituality, and all of this is about passion and sexuality. Marjorie Proctor Smith was at United Seminary last year and introduced many of us to this quote that I'm about to share, so I want to give her credit. I would have never found this on my own, I don't think. She was referring to Louise Erdrich's Transforming a Rape Culture, that particular book, in which Louise Erdrich, in that book, speaks about the terrible veils that drop across the faces and lives of women as they move throughout their lives. Veils that keep us all from resistance, veils of silence that tell us resistance is wrong. Erdrich remembers herself at 7 years old, just before her first communion, rehearsing over and over again, tipping back her head, eyes shut and tongue out, receiving Christ. It is a passive, obedient image. Then all of a sudden she has another image of another way of being in the world. And she says, to keep my mouth shut, to turn away my face, to walk back down the aisle, to slap the bishop back when he slapped me during confirmation, to hold the word no in my mouth like a gold coin, something valued, something possible, to teach the no to our daughters, to value their no more than their compliant yes, to celebrate no, to hold the word no in your fist and refuse to give it up, to support the boy who says no to violence, the girl who will not be violated, the woman who says, no, I will not, to love the no, to cherish the no, which is so often our first word, no, the means to transformation. So for me, this connection to resistance, and I was thinking back about reimagining 1993 and all the no's we said. We said we would not be separated from one another as best we could across race, class, sex, sexual orientation. We said no, we would not silence or shame our lesbian sisters. We said, no, we will speak about God in ways we choose to speak about it. No, we will not be introduced by our titles and our credentials. No, we will not have some who are leaders and some who are learners. we said, to me, that conference was an amazing festival of resistance. And in that sense, it was filled with power. It was filled with a sense of growing spirituality. It was filled with passion and sexuality.
Great. So our the whole idea of embodied spirituality, or a spirituality that claims our bodies and our whole selves, is not only a way of being whole and acting whole and being connected to others and to ourselves and to God, but it also is very much an act of resisting all those things in the culture that try to split off our bodies and ourselves from our spiritual life. Joan, you wanted to talk about sexuality and spirituality,
but I want to raise a question at this point, and then I would move on to another topic. And my question would engage Chris's analysis, because what I did not hear, I agree entirely with the premise that resistance is an act of a human act, a spiritual act. But what I didn't hear was the analysis you just pointed to, which is what tells us that which is to be resisted. Certainly I see an aspect of spirituality in being for separation. But I also want to affirm what I started affirming, that women's power is not just in identifying themselves as over against. So it's to say there's another half of the truth that needs to be added there, and not prematurely. Until the resistance is made, the union is not safe. But once the resistance is made, the humanity has not achieved its capacity if it stays there, especially if the analysis has not changed along with potentials in the situation or with the life stage of the person. So it sounded to me, and I think our friends here are listening rather carefully, it sounded to me we had a bit of a contradiction between us, and I think we did, and perhaps it was we're speaking different halves of an aspect of our erotic capacity. I do see our erotic capacity as much broader and wider than we have named in the past. So my understanding of the strategies we need to achieve, men and women alike, now, is to broaden our understanding, to rename, to reclaim how broad, diverse, wide, rich is the understanding of human erotic capacity. For that, I like to change the terminology, in fact, and invite my students to speak of themselves as panerotic, and within a range of a capacity for panerotic, to be making lifestyle choices as they begin to discover what sexual spiritual integration is for them. And there are several persons who have documented that kind of an understanding, that we're all born panerotic, and then society, as well as our own life experiences, individualize us into a far more limited palette. But every once in a while in a life, I think, power is to reclaim the breadth of human capacity. You invited me also to talk a little bit about what would be examples of embodied spirituality. It sounded to me as if that what you were calling me for.
I think we have to wait to do that in the next
session. Oh, we wait until the next time. Okay.
The examples.
Oh, we need to start.
Okay.
When we turn to the next section, we are all going to try to give examples, because I'm sure that's exactly what, if we're going to embody it, we have to tell the story of it so mm-hmm. that we can mm-hmm. Know it more. In listening to you, what I hear in a sense is that the word embodied, it's not necessary from a feminist perspective to say that spirituality is embodied, because there's no such thing as spirituality that is not embodied.
Of course, yeah.
That is, our spirituality is an expression of our connectedness to ourselves, our bodies, to others, to God, connectedness that brings together the bits and pieces
but actually connects us to others beyond ourselves. Spirituality always not only is the sum of the bits and pieces, but a sense, kind of the sense you had when you were, we were getting full of air a few minutes ago, when you are more than yourself. And so spirituality doesn't leave our bodies behind. It opens our bodies and we become more than we were before, more whole, more able to love.
Letty, can I just clarify very quickly? Joanne, did you hear me say that the resistance is, because you use the
is the content
over against. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand, I understand that to be a part of what resistance is, but I think that is a very narrow definition of resistance. I don't think it is just over against. I think simultaneously in acts of resistance, people are constructing and embodying new reality. So, I mean, I think that notion that resistance is over against, is a defensive posture, I simply do not accept. I think the mothers of the Plaza de Mayo, for instance, who stand there year after year after year with names and pictures of their loved ones who have disappeared, are both resisting powerful repressive forces. I feel they also are literally creating power and spaces out of which women can move and live and have their families and...
Certainly, yeah, the creation of a new community.
Always resists the old boundaries, and every teenager who leaves home knows that. I mean, everyone who brings home a partner for Christmas, and they're not acceptable. At the same act, the creation of a new community can become an act of resistance. I did not hear that before. I'm glad you clarified that.
Okay, well, we'll continue the conversation in a few minutes.